If you run a Shopify store, listen up. Shopify's got you covered for selling, but when your shipping volume grows and you're juggling multiple plugins just to get orders out the door, you need tools that can keep up. Stop duct taping your shipping workflow and use the tools that work better together, like Shopify and ShipStation. Think of ShipStation as Shopify's dedicated shipping partner. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels to save you time and money by automating the entire order fulfillment process, from syncing your orders all the way through inventory management and returns. Automate the rate browser to select the lowest rates on shipments, with discounts up to 90% off major carriers like USPS, UPS, and FedEx. No wonder businesses that use ShipStation grow 3 times faster on average and ship 15 times more orders. See how ShipStation can help you scale and boost your Shopify sales. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
Stop blaming it on holiday stress. We all know it's that time of year when everything feels drained, both your wallet and you. Well, the real problem is right under you. It's that saggy, old, unsupportive mattress. Well, say hello to Ghostbed. Ghostbed is family-run, consumer-loving, with over 20 years of mattress-making mastery. They've engineered the perfect sleep weapon. Durable, insanely comfortable, and cool enough to keep you chill all night long. Every Ghostbed packs their exclusive ProCore technology, a powerhouse support system that cradles your back, supports, and aligns your spine. Translation? You wake up feeling like a human again. Hot sleeper? Ghostbed's cooling materials fight heat 24/7, so you don't wake up sweaty, even when the thermostat cranked up. And here's the kicker. Fast, free shipping in just 2 to 5 days. A 101-night sleep trial and up to a 25-year warranty. That's confidence. Right now, Ghostbed is slashing prices. Up to 50% off compared to other brands. And because you're listening, you score an extra 10% off site-wide. Just use promo code PODCAST at checkout. That's PODCAST for 10% off on top of already insane deals. Upgrade your sleep. Upgrade your life. Ghostbed. The coolest beds in the world.
These are all women that are catches in every sense of the word. They just haven't found the right person for them yet. And that to me is where it's like the luck stuff feels more comforting and why it almost feels more of an eye roll when people try to be like, oh, just do this, that, and then you'll be in a relationship. It's like, okay, well, what if I already did all that? What if I have focused on myself? What if I have poured time into my friendships? What if I have poured time into my career? What if I have done this, that, whatever? What if I did everything on this made up checklist that you just gave me and I still haven't found someone? Because unfortunately, and this is the part that many people don't want to acknowledge, that is the truth for like a lot. I would venture to say maybe even the majority of women over a certain age.
Dude, where are you? Pick up your phone. I'm going to a summer party tonight, and you're obviously invited, so call me back.
Okay, love you.
What's up, you guys, and welcome back to Emotionally Online, the weekly summer party for spilling guts and sharing secrets, hosted by yours truly, the one and only Maddie Drosbeck, coming at you from the last episode of the year. Yes, you've heard it here first. You heard me correct. This is the last episode of 2025 before I go into a 2-week hibernation in which I'm going to be spending time with my family, giggling, hee-heeing, and ha-hawing with my friends, and getting in some much needed alone time in which I will be staring at a wall, probably watching movies, maybe doing a little bit of drawing, and otherwise just enjoying my solitude. After which I will reemerge, okay? And Emotionally Online is about to be a whole new show next year. We're undergoing a little bit of a metamorphosis by Hilary Duff, if you will, and it is gonna be incredible. Am I glad 2025 is over? Yes. Yes, I cannot say that this year was a good year. It was just a year. It was 365 days. And I am excited to just be out of it. And listen, I know that the passing of time and years changing isn't actually a true marker of change and moving on. However, I will take any opportunity to really embody a full reset when I can. And the New Year's is a good time to do that. So is there a big emotional difference between December 31st and January 1st? No. But I love being able to put things away in a box and be like, you know what? This year sucked and it's over now. Oh, girl, we're free. Don't even worry about that anymore. All right. 2025 is done and dusted. We're over that bitch. And we're moving onwards. Onwards and hopefully upwards. Because this year has, it's been a year. 365 days, no more, no less. No more, no less, people. I will say, though, 2025 has left us with one final truly juicy and gorgeous parting gift. And that parting gift has been Heated Rivalry. Meg brought Heated Rivalry up on the show a couple weeks ago, and I, at that time, didn't know what it was. I have since educated myself. And oh my God. Number one, everything should be gay. Who the hell needs straight hockey movies? Riddle me this. Can you even think of one? Blades of Glory. Blades of Glory is a little gay, though. Blades of Glory. That's not even a hockey movie. That's like a figure skating movie. I was just thinking about an ice rink. Think of a straight hockey movie, quickly. What's the one? I don't know if this is a hockey movie, but it's the one where he gives a speech in the locker room. And every time, my dad used to say that that's what he pictured. I was like amping up my trivia team before the finals. He would send me, what the fuck is it called? I'm never going to think of it. Anyways, somebody share it in the comments. Whatever that movie is, not nearly as good as what we've got going on in Heated Rivalry. Sports should always be gay. Heated Rivalry is awesome because it gives you exactly what you want. Number one, gay. Number two, super steamy, sexy, hot. Three, for the yearners. For the yearners. This Russian motherfucker. I understand the actor is not actually Russian. I wish he was. Because the little accent that he puts on in Heated Rivalry, it's really working for me. It's really working for me. And then I listen to these interviews and he's just got a, you know, not a Russian accent. And I'm like, damn. Hey, just for me for a second, can you just put that little accent back on? I want to see something. I'm just going to close my eyes. Hold on a second. All right. Now go. Now answer the question again. That's how I feel when I watch the interviews of the show. I love it. And I don't think it's any surprise that I love it as someone who attended the Luca Guadagnino University for Horny Yearners with a PhD. So it seems like I was maybe the perfect candidate for a show like Heated Rivalry. It's also like so Challengers coded. Like Challengers and Heated Rivalry, the overlap there of things to love, why I loved Challengers and why I currently really like Heated Rivalry. This is a Venn diagram we could really get into. Someone did make a little fan cam edit of Challengers and Heated Rivalry to My First Kiss by 303. She won't ever get enough once she gets a little touch. If I had it my way, you know that I'd make her say, ooh. Banger, banger. It was so good. I reposted that shit immediately once it was sent to me. Keep DMing me Heated Rivalry edits on Instagram just for my own personal joy, because I am watching them and saving them and creating museums inside my mind that many of you would probably enjoy a ticket to. Many, many of you would enjoy a ticket to that show. It's not even really enemies to lovers, because they're enemies and lovers at the same time. And it's really working for me. I am barking. I'm sweating and barking and gnawing at the bars of my enclosure. Okay. I sat on my couch this past Sunday. I watched all four episodes that were available to me in one clean swoop. And I needed to have my phone taken away from me during and after when that show was being shown to me, because it put me in such a space that I would have said anything to anyone. I watched Heated Rivalry and suddenly I was like, and what if I texted him? And what if I just put it out there? Because my brain was in a space where all I could think about was sitting on a bed and seeing someone sit at the end of a bed in a chair. I can't even say it. I'm going to sweat. I'm already sweating. I'm nervous. You know the scene I'm talking about, though, where he's like naked on the bed Shane is naked on the bed, and then Ilya is like sitting in a chair and they're talking to each other and they're like about to fuck. I started going blind and deaf in one ear. Like I should not have been able to access communication technology after watching the show, because I swear to God, I've never been hornier. So, you know, I watched 4 episodes of Heated Rivalry and then I did go make out with someone. I had to, because I absolutely had to. So just understand what you're getting yourself into if you're going to go watch Heated Rivalry, because you might be in a space afterwards. You might be in a headspace that's hard to escape from, which I'm not complaining about. I had a good time. I'm excited to continue watching more of these episodes as they come out. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And then I'm going to go home and visit my family for a week, and I guess we're all just going to have to watch Heated Rivalry together, because now I'm locked in. I can't not watch an episode. All right, Grandma, how do we feel about gay hockey TV shows where they may or may not fuck a lot? But my grandma's super into soap operas and shit, and I feel like what they do on soap operas is crazier than anything else on television. So it's like, if you can get into the soap opera cinematic universe, I feel like we can get you on board for anything. Every time I would walk in the room when my grandma's watching her soaps, I was like, what are they doing? It's like 3 characters died, but then they miraculously come back to life 4 days later. And I'd be like, I thought they were dead. And she's like, no, they were. Days of Our Lives or some shit. I also could be making this up entirely, but I was always confused. I walked in when she was watching her soaps. Someone's dead. This person's fucking this person's husband, and they got a secret child coming out over here, and this person's gay, and this person is committing crimes. Like, soap operas just take every single plot point and put it all in one episode. So, you know what? My grandma was big into that whole space. Let's get her into Heated Rivalry and see what happens. This is what an 85-year-old woman's brain looks like on Heated Rivalry. Capture it, scientists, clock in, because we're about to do incredible work over here. Speaking of going over the holidays, I have been thinking about this so much, and I also saw that Tiffany Ferg just posted a video about gift giving. I haven't watched it yet, but I have been thinking about how out of control gift giving has gotten recently, and particularly about how... I said this on like the Patreon live in November. I was like, damn, I think I kind of want to talk to my family about maybe paring back how we've been doing gifts in previous years, because I just don't really have the budget to buy 8 people really fantastic gifts this year. And I think sometimes, you know, you get used to buying gifts of a certain caliber for your family members. I know that over years past, I have really wanted to get gifts that my younger siblings and my parents loved. I think when I became old enough to have my own job and make my own money, I'm the oldest daughter, I really wanted to treat my siblings in ways that they couldn't treat me, because I'm like, oh, I'm in a different era of my life now, and here we are, and I can afford to buy all of you guys gifts. And I was really excited to do that. And then years go on, and it's almost like the bar gets upped every single year. You're expected to like, or not that you're expected, but I don't know. There's some kind of pressure to like keep being like the best gift giver. This pressure is probably entirely in my head, but I'm sure you know what I'm talking about. And this year, I just don't have the budget to outdo myself. I have had a year, as we all know. So, you know, I don't have budget to wow every single one of my fucking family members, of which I have many. So I very discreetly on the low said something to my mom. I was like, do you think that like maybe we could talk about paring back gifts this year for Christmas? And I was hoping that my mom was gonna take the charge on this one and be like, you know what, like, you don't have to get me and your father anything, because I swear to God, half the time I get gifts for my parents and they don't use it anyways. Sometimes I knock it out of the park. I got my dad a pair of Bose headphones last year for when he goes to the gym, and a Spotify subscription. Dude loves it. My parents, they had fucking Pandora in their cars still. Sirius XM radio. They don't know how to work any of this shit. So I've been trying to upgrade them and introduce them to new technology, because I'm like, you guys would love it. You just don't know how to do it. And we just got to get you set up on these things. So I got my dad Bose headphones and a Spotify subscription last year. And, you know, some years I've hit it out of the park with my mom. The year I bought her a 3-month Nuuly subscription, I hit it out of the park that year. But really, I just gave her something new to be addicted to because she still pays for Nuuly and does it every month. And I'm like, my bad. My bad. I gave you a 3-month subscription to Nuuly and you just committed yourself to it. Now she's obsessed with it. But that's fine. Anyways, point being, some years I really hit it out of the park. Other years, I just feel like it's flop after flop. Like one year I got my dad a massage gun and he literally never opened it. And then my little brother stole it. So Luke really cashed out that year. And then I got him a bidet another year. Luke also stole that. Nobody gives a shit. So I'm just like, what's the point in spending all this money when like half the time the gifts don't even get opened or they get passed off to someone else or, you know, whatever. We all can pick out our own items and like the things that we want. And I think at this point, we're all adults. We're all buying the shit that we want throughout the year anyways. I don't know that we need to predict what we might want and give each other these gifts on Christmas and try to raise the bar every single year. But I was hoping my mom was really going to take the charge on this one and be like, all right, everyone's adults, like, let's pare it back. But instead, she went in the family group chat and was like, all right, guys, I think we're going to pare back on Christmas this year. Or Maddie asked to pare back on Christmas this year because she has no money. I was like, Mom, that is not what I told you to do. Holy shit. She just blew up my spot completely. She was like, so Brokey McBrokester over there can't afford to buy you bitches gifts. So I was like, Mom, holy fuck, whatever. I was like, we were trying to keep this discreet and she just blew up my whole spot. It was just funny taken out of context to receive this text from my mom. Basically like, Christmas is canceled because Maddie's broke. Without the like additional explanation of like, okay, money's tight this year because, not that my family doesn't have it. Obviously they know that Mango died and pet death is expensive. So I don't really have a bunch of extra cash given that it was an unexpected expense. But yeah, it was funny to receive that text. It'd be like, all right, sorry guys. Sorry, I don't have the money to buy you things that you probably don't want anyways. Let's just not do this. So we all got assigned a sibling and we're just buying one gift instead of 100. So Luke is my person. I bought him a killer gift and that's it. My Christmas shopping is done for the year. But on top of how out of control Christmas gifts have gotten, the other thing I want to say that I think has gotten a little out of control is wedding registries. I am all for giving the bride and groom a gift to celebrate their big day. I usually will opt for giving a cash donation, cash or check donation to like their honeymoon fund so that they can go have a nice dinner, do extravagant things, really have this lavish romantic vacation celebrating their love because that feels the most appropriate to me. But there's something a little silly to me about wedding registries where it's like, we're in love, buy us this $600 espresso machine. And I'm like, why? You are in love, so I, someone who is not in love and single, has to buy you a $600 espresso machine. Why do I feel like this isn't fair? I'm like, I don't want to. And hey, when's anybody gonna buy me a $600 fucking Breville espresso machine? I'm single. Who's getting me gifts? What the hell's all this then? There's something about the wedding registry and how extravagant some of the items on the registry can be that do make me giggle a little bit. I get that it's supposed to be like fund to help the couple move into this next section of their life where they're, you know, starting a family, building a home, and like, you know, entering into this next chapter together. But I also feel like we're almost, times are changing. And people are getting married later where they already have like much higher paying jobs. They've probably already been living with their partner for a while before they get married. Like there is something about the wedding registry that I feel is becoming outdated. Like people used to get married when they were like 23 and had no money. And so they were like, yeah, we got to get these people money for a stove and a dishwasher and like maybe a high chair for the baby we want them to have in a year. And now you have people who are in their mid-30s getting married And when they get married, I'm supposed to buy them a $600 espresso machine, which I just think is funny. I'm not saying you don't deserve it. I hope that you get the $600 espresso machine. I just find it funny. There is just something about it that tickles me. It really does. And I'm not even saying this to be anti-wedding registry necessarily, though I do believe that it has gotten a little out of control with what people put on them. But more that I just want to throw out there that if we're going to go down this path of absurd and extravagant wedding registries, there should be a marker of life that single people are allowed to do that as well. Because it's like, what? I'm only allowed to ask someone to buy me a $600 espresso machine if I'm getting married? What if I'm not going to get married? What if I'm not going to do that? Then what? Then I never get to ask people in my life to buy me a $600 espresso machine just because? Well, what the fuck? Well, what the fuck? Like, there's just, you get what I'm saying? Are we cooking? Are we, is this an idea we could build upon? There's such few opportunities that you can convince people that that's an item that is a necessity that they need to buy you. And people get away with fucking murder with weddings. We're getting married. We're in love. Spend thousands of dollars on us now. Gun to your head. So I just think that if we're going to let all these married people get away with it, us single people have got to find a way to squeeze some money out of people too. So we're either paring back on wedding registries or we're paring up on getting gifts for single people. Think about it. Think about it. Cook on it. Marinate on it. Come back to me once you've formed your conclusions. Thank you so much.
Running a Shopify store and drowning in shipping chaos? ShipStation can fix this for you. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels with advanced automation, batch processing, and shipping discounts that a single platform just doesn't offer. Like discounts up to 90% off major carriers. See how ShipStation can make shipping for your Shopify store better. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
Stop blaming it on holiday stress. We all know it's that time of year when everything feels drained, both your wallet and you. Well, the real problem is right under you. It's that saggy, old, unsupportive mattress. Well, say hello to Ghostbed. Ghostbed is family-run, consumer-loving, with over 20 years of mattress-making mastery. They've engineered the perfect sleep weapon. Durable, insanely comfortable, and cool enough to keep you chill all night long. Every Ghostbed packs their exclusive ProCore technology, a powerhouse support system that cradles your back, supports, and aligns your spine. Translation? You wake up feeling like a human again. Hot sleeper? Ghostbed's cooling materials fight heat 24/7, so you don't wake up sweaty, even when the thermostat that's cranked up. And here's the kicker. Fast, free shipping in just 2 to 5 days. A 101-night sleep trial and up to a 25-year warranty. That's confidence. Right now, Ghostbed is slashing prices. Up to 50% off compared to other brands. And because you're listening, you score an extra 10% off site-wide. Just use promo code PODCAST at checkout. That's PODCAST for 10% off on top of already insane deals. Upgrade your sleep. Upgrade your life. Ghostbed. The coolest beds in the world.
Finish off the year here, I wanted to go through and clear out some of the final end of year submissions that caught my eye. So here is what's been going on with you guys. Hi, Maddie. I love the pod and your insights. Above all, I want to say thank you for being a voice celebrating fat people at this time. I can't imagine what it's like being a public figure with the onslaught of fat phobia everywhere, and I admire your strength of self and care. So grateful to you. I was wondering how you deal with people in your life going through a weight loss journey. It's usually framed as health and individual choice, but I can't help but feel like this person is taking drastic measures to make themselves not look like me. It's hard for me not to take it personally, as it always just feels like fat phobia. I would love to hear your thoughts and advice. Thank you for being you. I totally hear you. I think it is really, really complicated because ultimately, I don't have an issue with individual people choosing to go on an individual weight loss journey. My problem is more with the larger issues and things in the world that make people feel like they have to undergo a weight loss journey, that their value is dependent on whether or not they do that, that that is the only way to be beautiful, feel beautiful, to be respected by other people. My problem is not so much that an individual person is making an individual choice. My problems are much bigger than that. But when we're in this era where fat phobia is becoming so normalized and thin is in, messaging is literally everywhere, and the high level body image problems that we're seeing are really bad, it can be hard not to feel triggered or uncomfortable or to have some kind of reaction to seeing it on a smaller individual scale as well. I think that it would be kind of absurd to not have some kind of emotional reaction. I think it's totally fine to see people that you admire or people that you know going on weight loss journeys and having that maybe be something that you don't want to bear witness to. It's complicated though, because obviously the like high level cultural attitudes towards body image do impact people on an individual level. I am just not a fan of hyper focusing on the individual, but you're totally allowed to not resonate with the journey that someone else is going on and to remove yourself from those spaces if you don't feel that it is serving your own growth and happiness anymore. This is why I'm so pro unfollowing people and why I don't think unfollowing is that deep. I think that sometimes you're just like not compatible with what somebody is going through and what their journey is. I've always said that I really didn't like seeing weight loss content online because I felt that it had a net negative impact. And the reason why I said that is because I feel like most people who make weight loss content either don't care or don't have the ability to discuss weight loss with the kind of gentleness that the subject requires. And I feel like a lot of the time, most of the weight loss content you see online is violently fat phobic. It doesn't have to be, but most of it is. And so I have usually been like, I just think that this content is bad and I don't want to see it and I'm just going to block it off my timeline, because there have been very few people that I've seen talk about it in a way that isn't just straight up disrespectful and contributing to, you know, a culture that encourages disordered behavior with food and movement. Do I think it's possible to talk about a weight loss journey without being violently fat phobic? Yes, I do. I just don't think that most people care enough to be delicate like that. So I almost think that most people have this gut reaction to seeing someone that they admire online or that they know in person going on a weight loss journey. You have this like gut reaction where you're like, oh God, here we go again. Because you're almost expecting them to be adding to the culture that makes the world a little bit shittier for people whose bodies look like yours. To me, it's really all about the way it's being discussed, how delicate they're being, the tact they have, the acknowledgement of the mental health aspect of these things, and overall never discussing thinness as being like the key to a life that you did not previously have access to. I do believe that it's possible to be a smaller bodied person who is kind to fat people. And it is frustrating that people make it seem like that is such a hard thing. And I think particularly with weight loss content, a lot of the time when people are formerly fat and then they are thin for the first time maybe ever in their lives, I think a lot of people just feel like they're finally in the club. They finally got the invite in. And I think some people just need to feel better than someone else. And so they're not really concerned about continuing to help the community that they used to be a part of after the fact. And I think that that's where the problem comes in. But there are people out there that used to be plus size, that are still staunch allies to the plus size community. And I really just think that the vocabulary people have to talk about these things needs to be expanded, needs to be dove into a little further. I don't know. Is what I'm saying making sense? I just feel like weight loss journeys and dialogues that people want to have about weight loss are much more delicate than people would like to give them the attention and care for. It's so deeply tied to mental health. And obviously it's also tied to like the larger cultural conversation of what is sexy and what isn't, what is valuable and what isn't, what the hierarchy of bodies looks like in this day and age right now. What's the pressure surrounding that? We can't, like, we don't live in a black hole where we're uninfluenced or unimpacted by these things. And I really just think that a lot of people don't know how to have a conversation about weight loss in a more complicated way. I think it's possible. I just don't think that you see it a lot on social media because it's hard to hold space for all of these things to exist at the same time and really embody the walking contradiction of it all, because that's the human experience at the end of the day. There's nothing wrong with that. It's just so much bigger than individual people and individual choices. The individual people aren't necessarily the problem. They are being influenced by the problem. They can sometimes be mouthpieces for the problem, but they aren't the problem. Ultimately, it's so much bigger than that. But that's not to say that it can't be like a source of discomfort or negativity in your own life to be around it. I know people in my life I follow and adore, content creators who have undergone weight loss journeys and who have discussed it in a way that I thought was tactful and respectful, and people that have continued to be allies to the plus size community even after their weight loss. It is possible. I think a lot of people don't do that, but I do believe there is a way to talk about it and still be kind at the same time. So for me, it's not necessarily the content itself. It's the person and the messenger and how they're going about it, and whether or not they're doing any kind of internal reflection and unpacking about the larger ways systemic fat phobia has influenced their life and their relationship with their body and their perspectives. If somebody is making weight loss content and they're not engaging with fat phobia in like a deeper way, I unfollow. I don't read it. I don't watch it. I don't engage with it, because to me, it's just not helpful. And I think it's more harm than good. Again, I don't believe it's the individual's fault. And ultimately, I am all for unfollowing people, curating your feeds, and like just removing yourself from spaces that you don't resonate with. And I think with friendships, you're totally allowed to say that you don't want to talk about weight loss with them, that that's not a subject that you feel comfortable with, and you just, yeah, would prefer to not hear about their weight loss journey or to not be included in it. I think that is more than reasonable. And I think that, I mean, really, I believe that the person who's talking about a weight loss journey should ask if other people feel comfortable hearing about it before bringing it up. But that's mostly because I'm someone who is very delicate about this kind of stuff, because I know how deeply tied to mental health it all is and how triggering it can be for people. And yeah, I think it's a shame that people aren't more delicate about it. But c'est la vie. These are the times that we're in. My hope for the future is not that people stop making weight loss content or that we stop talking about this stuff altogether. I don't think that's realistic. I hope, though, that people can find ways to be more delicate and mental health first about these kinds of things, and that smaller bodied people continue to find ways to use their own voices and their own platforms to help fight systemic fat phobia, especially if they're going to make weight loss content. Because you can lose weight, you can live in a smaller body and not be a fat phobe. It is possible. I just think that most people don't care enough to engage with the material in a more intellectual way. I don't know how many of you guys follow Laura Gerard. She's like a fitness girly online, but I love her content. She doesn't post like explicitly weight loss content, but you know, she is one of these health creators, and I love her because I just feel like she discusses food and movement and your relationship with your body and weight changes and shifting with so much care and tact and love. And I really think that everybody should approach topics like these in the way that she does. I wish they did. I wish that people were more, again, fluent in how to discuss weight and exercise and nutrition without being a horrible, violently fatphobic freak in the process. I wish that people cared more, cared enough to learn how to be better in that way. And I think that part of why, you know, when we log on and we see someone we love going on a weight loss journey, why it triggers us so much is because we know how people usually act and what they usually say when that's the path they're going to go down. And usually it means that they're going to be nasty in the process. They don't have to be, though. And I think that maybe we just need to start holding people to a higher standard of like how they're going to talk about these things. It's not what they're talking about. It's how they're talking about it. And a lot of people just don't care enough, unfortunately. So that's how I feel about it. Hey, Maddie, I've been a regular listener for ages now and wanted to say thanks for providing such thought-provoking, hilarious, and consistent content. I thought you might have good advice for a conversation that has been cropping up more and more often in my life and often leaves me sad and awkward and uncertain as to what to say. I am 25 and engaged to a wonderful man. Most of my friends, however, are single, and a number of them have grown quite despondent attitudes about their romantic prospects. They are fascinating, insightful, individually minded, and intensely loving people and have extremely rich lives, investing lots into their friendships, careers, hobbies, and interests. I am unbelievably lucky to have them and thank God for them every single day, but when they start talking about dating and partners, I am at a loss. The friends I am talking about are women/queer friends. They will express ideas such as, I will be alone forever, nobody will ever want to be with me. They, quite rightfully, all have very high standards and would never be with someone just for the sake of it. The person has to be pretty much perfect for them. And I completely agree with what you said in a previous episode about the sheer luck factor in finding someone. This was my own experience too. I met my fiance at an event we were both at by chance, at a time in our lives when we were exactly in the right places to start a healthy relationship. But I feel like saying that to someone who is despairing about finding a partner is actually quite depressing. I think it's nicer to think that there's stuff you can do to increase the chances. On the other hand, I don't want to sound flippant or worse, smug by saying something like, it will totally happen, just give it time. Just because it worked that way for me by complete chance. That sort of comment wouldn't really hit anyway because these friends simply do not believe that's true. One of the things I find hardest is my honest belief that people who could be so perfect for you are actually really rare. Do you agree with that? What I am asking is this. How would you approach a conversation with an incredible person who is despairing about finding love when I honestly believe that it almost entirely comes down to luck and that those potential relationship people only come around once in a blue moon? I would never say it will happen when you least expect it. Thank you. I actually personally find the acknowledgement of the role luck plays in dating to be incredibly comforting and like it releases some of the pressure. To be able to at some point be like, I am who I am. I am a beautiful, wonderful person who has a full life. I, you know, give enough time to my hobbies and interests. I have a whole bunch of friends that I like. I have this going for me, that going for me. Like, you have so much going on in your life. At some point, to just step back and be like, it'll happen when it happens. What's meant for me will find me. The love that is coming for me will find me exactly when it's meant to and not a second sooner, and just put your hands up and leave it to the universe. I don't really feel like believing there is a task list of things you can do to make love more likely to you is comforting at all. I understand why you might say that in like a high level sense, because I think that's true for a lot of other subjects. Like, you want to believe that you have more control over something than you actually do. And like, oh, if I only just did XYZ, then I'd have a better chance at this happening. And there's like little ways that that's true in dating, you know, like if you find yourself in more social settings, if you are, you know, going out of your comfort zone to meet new people often. Obviously, you're going to up your chances of meeting someone just by default. That's true, right? But I think you reach a certain age where a lot of that stuff is just like not helpful anymore and almost a little eye-rolly. Like, for example, if I was talking to one of my friends, if I was venting to them about dating and romance and, you know, the state of it all. And let's assume that we're both around the same age, late 20s, early 30s, this kind of age bracket. And I'm just venting to my friend about how frustrating it can be. And let's assume that they've been in a relationship for like 2 years. And if they looked at me and they were like, you know, I just think that all you've got to do is just focus on yourself and your own hobbies and do your own thing. And like the right person will find you. You've got to love yourself before you can love anybody else, or all this other shit that people usually say. That would make me want to punch them in the face, because I've done nothing but focus on myself. I've done nothing but learn how to be comfortable with myself, learn how to love myself, learn how to do all of these fucking things. And there's something about like when people in relationships look at single people like they are people who would be in relationships if only they had done the secret work that you did. And I just don't find that to be true. I think that so many of the single women that I know have done so much of the internal work. They have full, complete, independent lives where they're flourishing in every single corner. It sounds like your friends are like that too, where it's like, there's nothing that I look at these single women in my life and think, if only they did this, they'd be in a relationship. Like, there is nothing like that. There's nothing to say. These are all women that are catches in every sense of the word. They just haven't found the right person for them yet. And that to me is where it's like the luck stuff feels more comforting, and why it almost feels more of an eye roll when people try to be like, oh, just do this, that, and then you'll be in a relationship. It's like, okay, well, what if I already did all that? What if I have focused on myself? What if I have poured time into my friendships? What if I have poured time into my career? What if I have done this, that, whatever? What if I did everything on this made up checklist that you just gave me and I still haven't found someone? Because unfortunately, and this is the part that many people don't want to acknowledge, that is the truth for like a lot, I would venture to say maybe even the majority of women over a certain age. I think a lot of that shit can be true when you're in your early 20s, when you're young. But I think once you become a whole adult human person who has a life that they have built for themselves, and you've been, you know, on your own, doing your own shit, supporting yourself, thriving in all these other corners of your life, and you're still single, to have someone look at you and be like, well, if only you did this, then you'd be in a relationship. I'm gonna. Like, this idea that people in relationships are the most optimized in some way is just not true. And it's irritating as a single person to hear people say so like shit like that. So to me, to hear someone in a relationship acknowledge the luck aspect is one, more truthful, and B, more comforting. Because to look around at all the women I know who are like the most brilliant, capable, talented, successful, just fucking badass, the best people on earth, to look around at all of my single friends and to think that people still are like telling women, if only you do this, if only you do that, then love will be more abundant to you. Meanwhile, who is saying that to men? Who is saying that to men? Nobody is saying that to men. There are men that like don't even know how to load a dishwasher that are in relationships. It's not about self-optimizing. Baby, you're incredible, okay? You have your whole life. There are so many women out there that are just fucking killing it in every sector. There's nothing else for you to do. It's just luck. We just gotta wait until we cross paths with the right person at the right time. And ultimately, there is some relief in that, in feeling like you can get off the hamster wheel that women were born onto, where you just are in a constant cycle of trying to be the best at all times. You have completely self-optimized by the time you're 16 years old. You know, like, I just feel like as a woman, you are born into a world that expects you to constantly be on top of it all the time, elevating, optimizing, being that bitch. You run laps around boys by the time you're 13. Like, I don't believe in it. And I think acknowledging that so much of it comes down to luck is actually it's refreshing and it feels nice because I think a lot of women are sick of people talking to them like they are single because they haven't done enough or they've done something wrong when that's not true. And nobody says that to men. Just saying. Truly, I think a lot of the time looking at your friends who are like unbelievably capable and gorgeous, sexy, beautiful, talented, capable in every single way that are still single, the best thing that you can say to them is acknowledge all of those things. Be like, no, you are a fucking catch. And like, I can list 100 reasons why you'd be a fantastic partner for someone. We just haven't found the right one yet. We haven't found someone that totally matches you yet. And that's okay. I think just like reminding your friends of how beautiful and loved and worthy of a fantastic earth stopping on its axis kind of love they are, how worthy of that they are, I think that's all you can do. And again, I find the reminder of the impact of luck in these things to be quite comforting. And yeah, to throw your hands up and just be like, fuck, it'll happen when it happens. And we're just going to have fun and enjoy our completely well-rounded, fantastic lives in the process. Because being single is also kind of awesome. Kind of. It is so awesome. So we can yearn for love. We can long for love. We can look forward to the day where we are so in love and we found someone who is a total match to us. And we can enjoy the periods of our life where other things become the more obvious focus. And I think to just remind your friends that they're worthy of something fantastic. They can ask for it all. They can have it all. And yeah, that they are worthy of love exactly as they are right now. And not that they have to be on a hamster wheel of self-optimization in order to find it. Maddie, I was just listening to the most recent episode and decided my time has come. I am here to be the voice of reason on the other side of the debate about AI, even though I am firmly on your side and cannot stand how quickly relying on AI has taken over the space previously reserved in the human brain for critical thought. I'm an indie filmmaker and recently finished producing a project that was made on a really low budget. On last week's episode, this was probably a couple weeks ago at this point, you mentioned that everyone you've heard defending AI use is always denying that they've used it. So I'm here to say I have used AI, and I'm curious to hear your thoughts on this matter. On this recent film I was on, we had a super low budget, and what money we did have was going towards paying our crew, feeding them, housing them, etc. Because we were tight on cash, many of us were wearing many hats, and I took on some of the production design tasks in addition to my producer role. There were things I needed to design that I simply did not have the skill set to make all on my own, but we also did not have the budget to pay anyone to do these jobs for me. So I used an AI site to help me actualize a creative idea that I came up with on my own, since my Photoshop skills only get me so far. I also then used Photoshop to help refine the finished design at the end. While we were using the prop I made with the help of AI on set, I thought about The Brutalist and other films that have found themselves in hot water after using AI to assist on creative tasks, not including the use of AI to touch up accent work. That's insane. I'm curious for your thoughts on this. How do you feel about AI being used as a tool to help artists without big budgets to actualize their visions for a lower cost so that those funds can be allocated elsewhere? I feel like there may be a case made in favor of AI as making certain things more accessible to indie artists who are not fully established in their careers yet. Love the pod. So here's my thing. I'm still anti in this case. I don't think my criticism for AI is always going to be towards the big guys and not the little guys, right? I think that I have a problem with like the normalization of AI in creative spaces. I have a big issue with like big studios using AI for anything creative. I have an issue with AI being used in a creative sense, period. Do I think that like indie filmmakers using AI is the end of the world? No. Do I like it? Also, no. I personally wouldn't, because I think that indie filmmaking has existed forever and people have worked on low budget projects forever. And we found a way to make these things come to life without AI in the past. And I think that we should just stick to that. I think that some things should be hard. And I know that AI can make it easier. And I don't want it to be easier. I want it to be just as hard as it always has been. I want to spend an entire weekend teaching myself how to use a certain software so I can make something that probably looks way shittier than if I could hire someone that is actually an expert in using that software to do. But at the end of the day, I did it. And I spent a weekend teaching myself this skill, and that's worth it to me. Or to find someone who is really good at it and, you know, barter some kind of deal, not with money, but in exchanging of your creative skills. They do this for your project, you do this for theirs. Like, I think I would jump to other solutions before I jumped to AI. Personally, I would never jump to AI. That's just where my line is as a creative at this point. I also believe in taking the L and being like, well, I fucked it. I've talked before about how I have in the past used AI to like help fix things that I fucked up, and how I used to believe that it was okay to use AI in a utility sense and to like help clean things up, but I didn't like it in like the sense that AI was inventing something for you or creating something for you. But now I don't even like those applications of it. And you know, like before I had used it to take a vertical photo and turn it into a horizontal photo so I could use it for a thumbnail because I forgot to take a horizontal photo. And now I would not do that. It's the easy solution, right? I forgot to take a thumbnail. Let me just turn this vertical photo that I took into a horizontal one. Now I would rather take the L and be like, fuck, I forgot to do this thing. Let me get creative on how I can shoot something that's different but still connects to what the video is. I think, for example, I used it on like a travel vlog that I was doing for the Spain trip 2 years ago. That's the thumbnail that I'm referring to. And it's like a picture of me on a boat, and it's gorgeous and it's a great photo. And obviously I'm editing that video when I am home from the trip. So my solution at the time was to use AI to turn the vertical photo horizontal. Is that the solution I would use now? No. I would go a harder route. I would get more creative with it. I would do something else that didn't require AI, because I'm just, even though that is not the problem, this one individual use case of it is not the problem, right? This is so minor and so minimal, as I'm sure in your use case it was as well. But I think to me, like looking back on even the minor use cases that I had used AI for in the past, I don't like it anymore. And I would rather just take the L and make something a little bit shittier, just so that I don't have to say I used AI for it. Just so that it came entirely from me. Maybe it took me slower. Maybe it was shittier. And maybe it was a real fucking pain in the ass. I would rather do it myself and have it be a fucking pain in my ass than have AI help me. And that's my take on it now. And I think that I think it's a slippery slope also, because I think that indie filmmaking is so important. There are so many fantastic films and shorts that come out of creatives that aren't backed by these major studios and production houses. And I honestly would hate to see a world where indie filmmakers felt like they needed to use AI to compete with the big studios rather than to just be their own thing and to really live in the indie filmmaking cinematic universe and enjoy the small budget and let things look a little shittier. Because it's not really about that. It's about the storytelling. It's about the performances, the world that you're able to create through a team of people who really care and are passionate about something regardless of how much money you have to pour into it. But I get it. I think it's a slippery slope, and I would always opt to create something a little bit shittier that's a little bit of a bigger pain in my ass, but that I did it myself. And that's where I sit on the matter. I think I'm always going to be pro being forced to get a little bit more creative and a little bit more in the weeds with it than I will be just taking AI as a way out, because it is an easier solution to the problem. Yeah. So in conclusion, I'm still anti, and I would not recommend AI usage for indie filmmaking. Because I think it's just the antithesis of what indie filmmaking is at the end of the day also. I don't know. So much of it just makes me so mad. And it's everywhere, and it's inescapable, and I just fear what movie making is going to turn into as AI becomes more and more prevalent. I fear the things that are in production right now that use AI more heavily than we even know yet, and I fear contributing to the normalization of that in any way, even in small ways. So with that, I'm going to throw it on over to the post show. If you guys miss me, if you're missing Emotionally Online during my 2-week break, feel free to come join us over on the Patreon, where there are literally hours of extra bonus episodes for you to consume. Also, if you didn't know, you can gift a Patreon subscription / request to be gifted a Patreon subscription. When you go to patreon.com/MaddieDrosbeck/gift, send that link over to your loved ones and they can get you set up with a little Patreon subscription. Thank you guys so much for an incredible year, an incredible season 4 of Emotionally Online. I love this show. I love our little corner of the internet. This is my absolute favorite thing to create, and I cannot fucking wait to show you all that I have store for us in 2026. So thank you so much for being here. I love you guys so much, and I will see you next year. Goodbye.
Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and 4-piece McNuggets.
It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com, RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring. Right.